Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Ana Mateo and Steve Ember. But first, this report with help from Anne Ball.
When she was growing up, Camille Roberts always saw science in her future. Her parents are both doctors of chemistry, and she wanted to follow their example by going into medical research. It was not just that she enjoyed the idea of making scientific discoveries. The 24-year-old Pennsylvania native says her parents taught her the importance of helping others. She saw medical research as a way of helping improve society. And seeking an education in such a field would likely lead to a high-paying job. So, in 2013, Roberts began studying biomedical engineering at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. During her 4 years there, she volunteered with young children in the city. She also worked as a teaching assistant for several professors. These experiences introduced her to other, more personal ways to help people.
After completing her studies in 2017, Roberts took a research position at the National Institute of Mental Health. But she soon began feeling deeply unhappy with her work. She wanted a change. "What meant more to me was a day-to-day impact that I could see and that I could feel and had more control over," Roberts told VOA. So in 2018, Roberts took a job doing what she had come to find much more enjoyable, teaching. She started teaching science classes at the Fusion Academy, a private high school in Washington, D.C. that serves students with non-traditional needs. Many of Roberts' former classmates and co-workers now have jobs that pay them much more than she makes. Many of them also have more free time than she does. But Roberts says she would not trade more money or more free time for the creativity and purpose she now finds in her work. Roberts is not alone. In fact, several new studies show that college graduates in the U.S. are increasingly looking for more than just good pay from their jobs. Experts say this may greatly change the relationships between employers and employees. In April, the employment website Indeed released a study on the job interests of recent college graduates between 2014 and 2018. Over the four-year period, the listings that gained the most interest changed from higher-paying business and finance jobs to arts and social services jobs.
Nick Bunker suggests the reason is the strong economy the U.S. is currently experiencing. He is an economist with Indeed's hiring lab. Bunker argues with high demand from employers and low unemployment, graduates are more likely to turn to career fields that might otherwise seem riskier to them. People do have their own individual views of the world, he said. And in a tighter labor market, recent graduates are going to have more of an ability to find jobs that fit with those views. Also in April, the research organization Gallup and Bates College in Maine published a joint study on career interests of U.S. college graduates. The researchers asked more than 2,200 graduates of four-year programs what they wanted from their jobs. The people they questioned were between the ages of 21 and 55. About 80% of them said it was either very important or extremely important to feel a sense of purpose from their work. What is a sense of purpose exactly? Rebecca Fraser-Thill says it comes from identifying goals in your work that are both meaningful to you, but that also affect the rest of the world. Fraser-Thill is Director of Faculty Engagement at the Bates Center for Purposeful Work. Fraser-Thill notes that the research shows that every generation represented in the study wanted to find a sense of purpose in their work. Other Gallup studies have shown that today's young people, often called millennials, want it even more than earlier generations.
In the past, employers offered greater job security than most jobs today, Fraser-Thill notes. A person would often work for one company for most of their lives. That company would then offer them financial assistance once they ended their careers. So even if workers did not feel as much of a sense of purpose, they at least felt a more personal connection to their employers. That doesn't exist anymore, said Fraser-Thill. All of the students who are graduating now are going out into a world where there are going to be fewer companies looking out for them. And because of that, they know that this sense of purpose has to come from within. She says people with jobs they find meaningful are 10 times more likely to be healthier mentally and physically. This, in turn, makes them better workers. But it is not necessarily the kind of job a person has that makes work seem purposeful. Instead, purpose comes from how an employee relates to the duties for which they are responsible. An office worker might not feel as though they are saving the planet, for example. But Fraser-Thill says if their employer takes the time to find what an employee's interests are and centers their responsibilities on those interests, workers will have a more purposeful connection to their work. Colleges and universities can help students find what gives them purpose before they graduate, she adds. The schools can do so by helping them find internships. And professors can offer classwork that makes them think about their career goals and hold discussions about what they should really expect from the working world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we talk about common expressions in American English. And on today's show, we will talk about a very common household object. People used it thousands of years ago, and most likely you used it today. I am talking about soap. History experts say instructions for making soap were reportedly found on a clay Babylonian tablet. Ancient Egyptian, Chinese, and Roman cultures also used some kind of soap. Today, there are many different types of soap, from bars to liquid, from scented to plain. There are soaps to clean our bodies, our pets, our cars, and our homes. Advertising for these products is big business. In fact, it is this connection to advertising that has given us the name of a very popular form of entertainment, soap operas. Just as many cultures have their own kinds of soaps, they also have their own kinds of soap operas, complicated stories about human relationships. Many years ago, they were the first programs to be paid for by soap-making companies. Companies that made soaps, detergents, and other cleaning products originally broadcast their commercials during these shows. And who was mainly watching these daytime shows? Housewives. So these commercials were aimed at women who may have been cleaning their homes while watching the television program.
Put new duds in your washing machine. Finest duds you've ever seen. Bigger news now when you sing. D-U-Z does everything.
The new duds brings you The Guiding Light, created by Erna Phillips.
So that is where the soap part of the name soap opera comes from. But what about opera? Why not call them soap shows? Well, in soap operas, the human stories that play out are extreme. The characters and situations of the shows are over the top. They probably would not happen in real life. In fact, that is why many people criticize or make fun of soaps. They are too unrealistic. But who cares? Not the people who love soap operas, that's for sure. People do not watch soap operas to see real life or to learn valuable lessons. Soap operas are escapist entertainment. You get to escape your own life and live dangerously in someone else's for about an hour at a time. As you may have noticed during this program, we often call soap operas just soaps. As in, don't bother Felicia right now, she is catching up on all her soaps. Now, some people may not want to admit that they enjoy watching such a show. For this reason, some people call soap operas their guilty pleasure. Guilty pleasures appeal to our secret desires, the ones we do not like to publicly share. You watch something, enjoy it, and then feel a little guilty afterward. People who watch soap operas, either daytime or nighttime soaps, are usually very loyal followers. In fact, it is this audience loyalty that appealed to advertisers in the first place. Soaps can be very addictive. Their stories are open-ended. Each episode leads to the next, to the next, to the next. And they usually end on some sort of cliffhanger or an especially exciting ending. You really want to know what will happen next. Tune in next week. And you do tune in next week. You can't wait to find out what happens. That is how a soap opera gets you hooked. But that's not all. I have so much more to tell you. Next week on Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo.
And now for the next 30 minutes, as the world turns.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
I want to say to you that for the next 4 years, there'll be a Democrat in the White House, and you're looking at him.
Presidential elections are exciting events in American politics. Few elections for the White House have been as exciting as the one in 1948. And few have had such surprising results.
This is NBC Television.
We have obtained the results from the state of Ohio, which assures victory for President Truman and Senator Barkley. With Ohio's 25 electoral votes, President Truman and Senator Barkley will have a total of 266 votes in the Electoral College. This is the minimum figure necessary for victory.
Four candidates were nominated for president in the 1948 election. One was the man already in the White House, the candidate of the Democratic Party, President Harry S. Truman. Truman had been the party's vice presidential candidate with Franklin Roosevelt in 1944. When Roosevelt died a year later, Truman became president. He was the one who made the decision to drop atomic bombs on Japan to end World War II. But Truman did not do well during his first few months in office. He made several serious mistakes. He had trouble with the economy and organized labor. His party lost control of the Senate and the House of Representatives in the congressional elections of 1946. Most Americans had little faith in Truman's ability as a leader. They expected that he would lose the presidential election in 1948 if he chose to be a candidate. President Truman did choose to run. He took several strong steps to show his leadership in the months following the Democratic defeat in the congressional elections. Truman called on Congress to pass a number of laws to help black people. He took firm actions in his foreign policy toward the Soviet Union. These included the Marshall Plan and the Berlin Airlift, as we discussed in our last two programs. And he began to speak out with much more strength to the American people. Truman succeeded in winning the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. He chose Alban Barkley, a senator from Alabama, for vice president. Senator Barkley and I will win this election and make these Republicans like it. Don't you forget that, Truman declared in accepting the nomination. The Republicans nominated New York State Governor Thomas Dewey. Dewey was a wise and courageous man. He was also very serious. Truman campaigned by telling the voters that Dewey did not understand the needs of the average American. He called Dewey a candidate of rich people. One day, Dewey got angry at a railroad engineer because his campaign train was late for a speech. Truman said this proved that Dewey did not understand the problems of railroad engineers and other working Americans. He tried to make the election a choice between hard-working Democrats and rich Republicans. Two other men also were candidates for the presidency. Both were from newly created parties. One was Strom Thurmond from South Carolina. He was a candidate of the States' Rights Democratic Party, also known as the Dixiecrat Party. Most of his supporters were white people from the southeastern part of the country. They opposed giving full rights to black people. The other candidate was Henry Wallace of the Progressive Party. His supporters believed that Truman had turned away from the progressive ideas of Franklin Roosevelt. Both Thurmond and Wallace had broken away from the Democratic Party. Most political experts believed these two candidates would take votes away from President Truman. They believed the Republican Dewey would surely win the election. President Truman did not have strong public support. But Harry Truman was a fighter. He did not believe the election was lost. He took his campaign to the American people.
On election day, the president, the Congress, the governor, the mayor, all cease as the government. You are the government, because then you decide what sort of a government you want. And when you do like you did in 1946, when two-thirds of you stayed home, you get just what you deserve. You got that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
He said he had always campaigned by going around, meeting, and talking to people. Running for president was no different, he said. He just got on a train and started across the country to tell people what was going on. He wanted to talk to them face to face. When you stand there in front of them and talk to them, he said, the people can tell whether you are telling them the facts or not.
If you give the Republicans complete control of this government, you might just as well turn it over to the special interests, and we'll start on a boom and bust cycle and try to go through just what we did in the 20s and end up with a crash, which in the long run will do nobody any good but the communists.
Truman campaigned with great energy. He made hundreds of speeches as his train crossed the country. It became known as the Whistle Stop Campaign because it stopped at some of the smallest towns and villages in the country. Truman gave speeches from the back of his campaign train, the Ferdinand Magellan. He spoke to farmers in Iowa. He visited a children's home in Texas. And he discussed issues with small groups of people who came to visit his train when it stopped in rural areas of Montana and Idaho. Dewey and the Republicans laughed at Truman's campaign. They said it showed that Truman needed votes so badly that he had to spend his time looking for them in small villages. Truman said the criticism proved that Republicans did not care for the average American. Dewey also campaigned across the country by train, but he showed little of the fire and emotion in his speeches that made Truman's campaign so exciting. Dewey's speeches were safe. One reporter wrote that Dewey was acting like a man who had already been elected and was only passing time waiting to take office. Dewey had good reasons to feel so sure of being elected. Almost every political expert in the country said Truman had no chance of winning. The Wall Street Journal, for example, printed a story about what Dewey would do in the White House after the election. And the New York Times said that Dewey would win the election by a large majority. Truman refused to accept those views. Instead, he spoke with more and more emotion against Dewey. Most Americans still believed that Truman would lose, but they liked his courage in fighting until the end. One supporter shouted, Give 'em hell, Harry, them being the Republicans. Soon, supporters across the country were shouting, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman made special appeals to working people, Jews, blacks, Catholics, and other traditional supporters of the Democratic Party. In his final radio speech before the election, he promised to work for peace and a government that would help all people. Then he went to his home in the state of Missouri to wait with the rest of the country for the election results. Republicans across the country greeted Election Day happily. They were sure that this was the day that the people would choose to send a Republican back to the White House after 16 years. Some of the early voting results from the northeastern states showed Truman winning. But few Republicans worried. They were sure Dewey would be the winner when all the votes were counted. The Chicago Tribune was also sure who the next president would be, declaring in a huge headline, "Dewey defeats Truman." But the newspaper was wrong. Everyone was wrong. Everyone, that is, except Harry Truman and the Americans who gave him their votes. Truman went to bed on election night before all the votes were counted. He told his assistant that he would win. He awoke early the next morning to learn that he was right. Not only did he defeat Dewey, as he thought he would, but he won by a good number of votes. And he helped many Democratic congressional candidates win as well. The Democrats captured both houses of Congress. After the results were announced, as heard in this old recording, Truman showed his sense of humor by joking about the predictions of his defeat.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company, as Kelton Bourne was saying, "While the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote, we have yet to hear from the..." Very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority." And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
Harry Truman would make many difficult decisions as America moved into the second half of the 20th century. Truman would send American troops to help the United Nations defend South Korea against aggression from the North. He would join other Western leaders in establishing a new alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They established NATO to provide for the joint defense of Europe and North America. Truman and later presidents would make decisions to send large amounts of economic and military aid to countries around the world. Many of these decisions were necessary because of America's new responsibilities after World War II as leader of the Western world.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.